sighed. "My money is in the hands of strangers. Their circumstances are beyond my ken. I have no inkling of the misfortune that could strike them. How could I ward it off? Perhaps they have become spendthrifts and are hosting a party in a tavern garden, and others are attending this party for a brief moment before fleeing to America. Now, when my shop closes on a workday evening, and I am suddenly faced with hours in which I can do no work for the incessant needs of my business, then my agitation, a distant harbinger every morning, tosses inside me like a returning tide. But it cannot endure being inside me, and it sweeps me away without a goal. And then I have no use whatsoever for this mood, and all I can do is go home, for my face and hands are dirty and sweaty, my clothes are stained and dusty, with my shop cap on my head, and my boots scratched up by the nails of crates. I then walk as if on waves, drumming with the fingers of both hands and stroking the hair of passing children. But the distance is too short. Soon I am inside my building, opening the elevator door and stepping in. I see that now I am suddenly alone. Others who must climb stairs, grow slightly tired, have to wait with hurriedly breathing lungs for someone to come and open the apartment door, giving them good reason to be annoyed and impatient. They now enter the vestibule, where they hang up their hats, and they are not alone until they walk through the corridor past several French doors and get into their own rooms. I, however, am instantly alone in the elevator, and propped on my knees, I gaze into the narrow mirror. When the elevator starts rising, I say, "Keep quiet, step back. Do you want to melt into the shade of the trees, behind the draperies on the windows, into the vault of the bower?" I talk through my teeth, and the staircase landings glide down the frosted panes like cascading water. "Fly away. Your wings, which I have never seen, may carry you to the village valley or to Paris, if you feel an urge to go there. But enjoy the view through the window when the processions converge from all three streets, not shifting aside for each other, but passing through one another, and letting the square emerge free again as their final ranks march off. Wave your handkerchiefs, be indignant, be moved. Praise the beautiful lady driving past. Walk across the wooden bridge spanning the brook, nod at the swimming children, and marvel at the hurrah rising from the thousand sailors on the distant battleship. Just follow the inconspicuous man, and when you have shoved him into a doorway, rob him and then watch him, each of you with his hands in his pockets, as he sadly goes his way into the left-hand street. The scattered policemen galloping on their horses rein in their animals and push you back. Let them. The empty streets will make them unhappy. I know they will. They are already riding away two by two, if you please, slowly rounding the street corners, speeding across the squares. Then I have to get out. Send the elevator back down, ring the apartment bell, and the maid opens the door while I say, "Good evening." Absently gazing out. What will we do in these spring days that are now hurrying toward us? This morning the sky was gray, but if you go to the window now, you are surprised and you lean your cheek against the window latch. The sun is already setting, of course, but down below you see its light on the face of the childlike girl who is just strolling and looking about. And at the same time you see the man's shadow upon her as he hurries up behind her. And then the man has passed her, and the child's face is utterly bright. The Way Home. Just look how persuasive the air is after the thunderstorm. My merits appear to me and overpower me, although admittedly I offer no resistance. I march along, and my tempo is the tempo of this side of the street, this neighborhood. I am rightfully responsible for all the knocks on doors, on tabletops, for all toasts, for the lovers in their beds, in the skeletons of the new buildings, pressed against the house walls in dark alleys, or on the ottomans of bordellos. I assess my past against my future, but find both of them excellent. I can give neither one the preference, and I can carp only at the inequity of Providence, which has favored me in this way. It is only upon entering my room that I get to thinking, although without having found anything worth thinking about while climbing the stairs. It doesn't help me much if I open the window all the way, and the music is still playing in some garden. The people running by. When we stroll through a street at night, and a man, already visible from far away, for the street rises in front of us and there is a full moon, comes running toward us, we will not grab hold of him, even if he is weak and ragged, even if someone is running after him and yelling. We will simply let him run on. For it's night, and we cannot help it, if the street rises in front of us in the full moon. And besides, perhaps these two people are staging the chase for their own amusement. Perhaps the two of them are pursuing a third. Perhaps the first man is being pursued through no fault of his own. Perhaps the second one wants to murder him, and we will be accomplices to the murder. Perhaps the two of them know nothing of one another, and each is simply running home to bed on his own account. Perhaps they are sleepwalkers. Perhaps the first man is armed. And anyway, don't we have the right to be tired? Haven't we drunk a lot of wine? We're glad that we no longer see the second one, either. The passenger. I stand on the platform of the trolley car, and am completely insecure about my footing in this world, in this city, in my family. Nor could I indicate even casually what demands I might rightfully make in any direction. In no way can I defend myself for standing on this platform, clutching this strap, letting this trolley carry me along, defend people for scurrying out of the way or walking quietly or window shopping. Of course, no one is asking me for a defense, but that's beside the point. The trolley approaches a stop. A girl comes over to the steps, ready to get out. She is as obvious to me as if I had run my fingers over her. She's wearing black. The pleats of her skirt barely stir. Her blouse is snug and has a collar of white, fine-meshed lace. Her left hand is propped flat against the side of the trolley. The umbrella in her right hand is poised on the second step from the top. Her face is brown. Her nose, slightly pinched on the sides, has a broad, round tip. She has a lot of brown hair, and small, stray hairs on her right temple. Her small ear lies close to her head, but by standing near her, I can see the entire ridge of her right ear conch and the shadow at its root. I wondered back then, how come she's not astonished at herself? How come she keeps her mouth shut and says nothing along those lines? Frocks. Often when I see frocks with manifold pleats, ruffles, and ornaments fitting so beautifully on beautiful bodies, I think they will not remain that way for long. Instead, they'll develop wrinkles that cannot be ironed out. Thick, unremovable dust will settle in the adornments, and no girl will want to appear so dismal and ridiculous as to slip into the same precious frock early in the morning and take it off at night. Still, I see girls who are certainly beautiful and display many attractive muscles and small bones and taut skin and masses of fine hair. and yet they sport that same natural masquerade day after day, always propping that same face on the same palms and letting their mirrors reflect it. It is only on some nights, when they come home late from a party, that the frock looks frayed in the mirror, puffy, dusty, already seen by everyone, and scarcely to be worn again. The rejection. Whenever I meet a beautiful girl and ask her, "Please come with me, do," and she walks on without a word, her drift is, "You are no duke with a soaring name, no four-square American with an Indian stature, with level eyes, with a skin massaged by the air of grasslands and the rivers flowing through them. You have never traveled to or on the great seas, which are goodness knows where. So please tell me, why should a beautiful girl like me go with you?" You are forgetting that no automobile carries you through the streets, rocking in long sweeps. I see no retinue of gentlemen pressed into their clothes, blessing you in murmurs, walking behind you in a precise semicircle. Your breasts are snugly laced in your corset, but your thighs and hips make up for that abstinence. You are wearing a pleated taffeta dress, the kind that certainly delighted all of us last autumn, and yet from time to time you smile. That mortal danger emanating from your body. Well, we are both right. And rather than having it dawn on us irrefutably, don't you think that each of us should really go home alone? Reflections for Amateur Jockeys. Nothing, once you think about it, could tempt you to be the winner of a race. When the orchestra strikes up, the glory of being hailed as the best horseman in a country is too delightful to prevent remorse from setting in the next morning. The envy of our opponents, cunning and rather influential men, is bound to cause us pain in the narrow enclosure through which we ride after that vast expanse of the race course, which soon stretched out empty before us, except for a few straggling riders from the previous round who were tiny now as they charged toward the edge of the horizon. Many of our friends are hurrying to collect their winnings, and so they merely shout their hurrahs to us over their shoulders from the distant betting window. Our best friends, however, did not even bet on our horse, for they feared that if they were to lose, they would be angry at us. But now that our horse has come in first, and they have won nothing, they turn away as we pass, and they prefer to gaze along the stands. Our rivals behind us, steady in their saddles, are trying to overlook the misfortune that has struck them and the injustice that is somehow being done to them. They are putting on cheerful expressions, as if a new race had to begin, and a serious one after such child's play. Many women find the winner ridiculous because he struts about and yet can't cope with the endless handshaking, saluting, bowing and distant waving, while the losers have shut their mouths and are casually patting the necks of their mostly whinnying horses. Eventually, the sky clouds over, and it actually starts raining. The window facing the street. If a person leads a desolate life, and yet would care for some sort of company now and again, if, depending on the changes in the time of day, the weather, his work schedule, and the like, he suddenly wishes to see an arm, any arm, to cling to, that person will not get by for long without a window facing the street. And if he is in no mood to look for anything, and, being tired, merely steps over to his windowsill, his eyes darting up and down between the public and the sky, and wants none of it, and tilts his head back slightly, then the horses down below will nevertheless yank him down into their retinue of vehicles and hubbub, and thus finally toward human harmony. The wish to be an Indian. If only one were an Indian, ever alert, and leaning into the wind on a speeding horse, always jerkily quivering over the quivering ground, until one dropped one's spurs, for there would be no spurs, until one hurled away one's reins, for there would be no reins, and one barely saw the countryside before one as a smoothly mown heath. But now, without the horse's neck and horse's head. The trees. For we are like tree trunks in the snow. They seem to be resting smoothly, as if one could push them away with a slight nudge. No, one cannot, for they are firmly attached to the ground. But lo and behold, this too is sheer semblance. Unhappiness. One evening, when I could endure it no longer, it was in November, and I was dashing around the narrow carpet of my room as if it were a racetrack, and, startled by the sight of the illuminated street, I turned away, yet found a new goal in the depth of the room, in the chasm of the mirror, and I shrieked merely in order to hear the shriek to which nothing responds, which nothing can deprive of the power of shrieking, and which, consequently, rises unhampered and cannot stop even if it fades out. The door flew open out of the wall, and so hastily, because haste was necessary, and even the cart horses down below on the roadway reared like horses maddened in a battle, baring their throats. Like a small ghost, a child swept in from the pitch-dark corridor where the lamp was not yet burning, and he remained on tiptoe on an imperceptibly swaying floorboard. Instantly blinded by the twilight in the room, he was about to quickly cover his face with his hands, but then unexpectedly calmed down at the sight of the window, where, beyond the crossbars, the high-swept vapor of the streetlight had finally settled beneath the darkness. Propping his right elbow against the wall of the room, he held himself upright in the open doorway, letting the draft from outside play around his ankles, and also his neck, and also his temples. Eyeing him briefly, I then said, "Good day," and removed my robe from the stove screen because I didn't care to stand there half-naked. For a short while I kept my lips open to release my agitation through my mouth. I had a sour taste in my mouth. My eyelashes fluttered in my face. In short, that visit, although expected, was simply the last straw. The child was still standing in the same place, by the wall. He had pressed his right hand against its surface, and, with red cheeks, he simply couldn't get enough of the fact that the whitewashed plaster had a coarse grain which chafed his fingertips. I said, "Are you sure it is I you are looking for? Could you be mistaken?" "There's nothing easier than making a mistake in this large building. My name is so-and-so. I live on the third landing. Am I the person you wish to visit?" "Quiet, quiet," said the child over his shoulder. "It's all correct." "Then come further into the room. I'd like to close the door."
"I've just closed the door. Don't bother. Just calm down."
"It's no bother. But a lot of people live along this corridor, and naturally we're all acquainted. Most of them are coming home from their jobs now. If they hear someone talking in a room, they simply feel they have the right to open their doors and check what's going on. That's just the way it is. These people have their daily work behind them, and they won't knuckle under to anybody in their provisional evening freedom. Besides, you're quite aware of that. Let me close the door." Why, what's wrong? What's the matter with you? The whole building can come for all I care, and let me repeat, I've already closed the door. Do you believe you're the only person who can close it? I've even turned the key.
Well, fine, that's all I want.
You didn't need to turn the key. And now that you're here, do make yourself comfortable. You are my guest. You must trust me completely. Make yourself at home. Don't be shy. I won't force you to stay or to leave. Need I say so? Don't you know me by now?
No. You really didn't need to say so. In fact, you shouldn't have said so. I'm a child. Why all this fuss and bother?
It's not as bad as all that. Of course, a child, but you're not that little. You're quite grown up. If you were a girl, you couldn't just simply lock yourself up in a room with me.
We don't have to worry about that. I only wanted to say that my knowing you so well offers me little protection. It merely relieves you of the effort to tell me lies. Nevertheless, you are paying me compliments. Do stop. I demand that you stop. Besides, I can't recognize you everywhere and every time, least of all in this darkness. It would be much better if you made some light. No, never mind. In any case, I'll remember that you've already threatened me.
What? I threatened you? Now look here. I'm so glad you're finally here. I say finally because it's already so late. I simply don't understand why you've come so late. Perhaps I was so overjoyed that I inadvertently said things I shouldn't have said, and you took them amiss. I'll admit 10 times over that I did say those things. Indeed, I threatened you with anything you like. Just let's not argue, for goodness sake. But how could you believe it? How could you insult me like that? Why do you want to devote all your strength to spoiling this brief moment of your presence? A stranger would be more accommodating than you are.
That I believe. It was no great insight.
By nature, I'm as close and as accommodating to you as any stranger could get, and you know it. Then why so wistful? If all you want to do is put on an act, I'll leave momentarily.
Really? You have the nerve to tell me that, too. You're a bit too bold. After all, you are in my room. You're rubbing your fingers like crazy on my wall. My room, my wall. And besides, the things you're saying are ridiculous and not just impudent. You say your nature forces you to speak to me like that. Really? Your nature forces you? That's so nice of your nature. Your nature is the same as mine. And if I act friendly to you by nature, then you should behave no differently.
Is that friendly?
I'm talking about before.
Do you know what I'll be like later on?
I know nothing.
And going over to the nightstand, I lit the candle on it. In those days I had neither gas nor electric light in my room. Then I sat at the table for a while until I grew tired of that too. I put on my overcoat, took my hat from the sofa, and blew out the candle. As I walked out, my foot got caught in a chair leg. On the stairs, I ran into a tenant from my floor.
"Are you going out again, you rascal?" he asked, resting on his legs, which were straddling 2 steps.
"What should I do?" I said. "I've just had a ghost in my room."
"You sound as dissatisfied as if you had found a hare in your soup."
"You're making fun of it, but I can assure you a ghost is a ghost."
"How true, but what if someone doesn't believe in ghosts?"
"Why, do you think I believe in ghosts? But what good does it do not to believe?"
"It's quite simple. You don't have to be afraid when a ghost actually comes to you."
"Yes, but that's only an incidental fear. The real fear is the fear of what caused the apparition, and that fear remains. I've got a whole lot of it in me."
I was so nervous that I began rummaging through all my pockets.
"Since you're not afraid of the apparition itself, you could easily have asked what caused it."
"It's obvious you've never conversed with ghosts. One can never get precise information out of them. It's like pulling teeth. These ghosts seem to be more skeptical about their existence than we are, which, by the by, comes as no surprise, considering how frail they are."
"But I've heard they can be nursed back to health."
"My, you're well informed. It's true, but is anyone going to do it?"
"Why not? If, say, it's a female ghost," he said, and swung his leg to the top step.
"I see," I said. "But even then it's not worth the trouble."
I thought of something else. My acquaintance was already so high up that in order to see me he had to bend under the well of the staircase.
"But nevertheless," I exclaimed, "if you take away my ghost up there, then I'll never speak to you again."
"Oh, I was only joking," he said, pulling his head back.
"Well, then, that's fine," I said. And indeed I could just as easily have gone for a walk.
But feeling so forlorn as I did, I preferred going back up and getting to bed.
Be your mind, dream, 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 be you think you'd feel when you're speeding and lonely? How do you think you'd feel when all you can say is if only, if only I had a little, if only I had some change, if only, only, how do you think it feel, when do you think it stops? We'll be right back.
Thank you. This next song features Michael on the sitar keyboard, and it's really a beautiful song called Vanishing Act. I hope you like it.
Country music station plays soft, but there's nothing, really nothing to turn off. Just Louise and her lover, so entwined, and his visions of Johanna that conquer my mind. Empty lot where the ladies play, blind man's bluff with the keychain, and the all night girls, the whisper of escapades out on the D train. We can hear the night watchman click his flashlight, ask himself if it's him or them, it's insane. Right, she's just near. She's
delicate and seems like the mirror. But she just makes it all too concise and too clear that Johanna's not here. Oh, ghost of electricity howls in the bones of her face. Where these visions of Johanna have not taken my place. Our little boy lost, he takes himself so seriously. He breaks of his misery, he likes to live dangerously. And when bringing her name up, he speaks of a farewell kiss to me. You got a lot of gall to be so useless and all, muttering small talk at the wall while I'm in the hall. Oh, how can I explain? It's so hard to get on. And these visions of Johanna, they'd kept me up past the dawn. Inside the museums, infinity goes up on trial. Voices echo, this is what salvation must be like after a while. But Mona Lisa must have had the highway blues, you can tell by the way she smiles. See the primitive wallflower freeze when the jelly-faced women all sneeze. Hear the one with the mustache say, geez, I can't find my knees. Oh, jewels and binoculars hang from the head of the mule. But these visions of Johanna, they make it all seem so cruel. The peddler now speaks to the countess who's pretending to care for him, saying, name me someone that's not a parasite and I'll go out and say a prayer for him. But like Louise always says, you can't look at much, can you, man, if she herself prepares for him. And Madonna, she still has not showed. We see this empty cage now corrode, where her cape of the stage once it flowed. The fiddler, he now steps to the road. He writes, everything's been returned which was old. On the back of the fish truck that loads while my conscience explodes. Oh, harmonicas play the skeleton keys and the ray. And these visions of Johanna are now all that remain. Thank you.
you're gone, I just can't go on, girl. Why don't you say you're sorry and come over? Give love a try, don't let me go by. Give love a try, don't let me cry. My nights are lonely, your love, girl, cause you treat me so right. Give love a try, don't let me go by. Give love a try, don't let me cry.
This misery, try to find what life's supposed to be.